Introducing a few of our most honored guests here tonight from radio station WPA, Big Bill Hill and Buddy Span. Yeah!
Yeah, I like that. Michael Frank, thanks for joining us.
Delighted to be here, Dave.
I'm going to turn it up a little bit there. Cadillac Baby. First of all, I haven't seen you in 20 years. Now I've seen you twice in a week or something.
You're both still out here.
President, founder of Earwig Music.
Yes.
Do I have that right?
Started right here in Chicago in 1979.
Earwig Music Company. And so I knew you through, I really got to know you through your work with Honey Boy Edwards. You know, we did a lot of stories on him and stuff like that. You played with him.
I knew him 39 out of the last 40 years.
Yeah.
39 years.
Yeah. But you've got this project. This is like right up, this is just so great. I don't know where to begin. Just, well, you know, we'll just do 101. You heard a little bit of this Cadillac Baby there at the beginning of the segment.
Tell people who Cadillac Baby was.
Yeah.
And
well, who was he?
Cadillac Baby was a hardworking hustler. I mean that in a positive sense, who came up to Chicago right after World War II.
Came up from Mississippi.
From Mississippi, around near Edwards, Mississippi, near Jackson. And he worked while he was up here initially as a day laborer and a janitor, but he was a blues entrepreneur early on down in Mississippi with his mother, running house parties with blues, with the Mississippi Sheiks, and selling fish and moonshine. And so when he got up here, he wanted to do that again because he loved blues. He loved gospel, too, and, you know, all kinds of music. But he was especially interested in country blues, urban blues, R&B, and gospel. And so he decided, after he'd saved up enough money to get started, that he wanted to have a nightclub. And he loved Cadillacs. So he started a club called Cadillac Baby's Show Lounge. But that wasn't really the first version of it. And he used to help a lot of musicians and poor people, wineheads as he called them, just give money and help them when they needed a favor or something. Just a little helping hand. And so he started to help musicians, and those musicians suggested to him that he get into the record business in order to make some of the money back that he'd so generously given them. And that's why he started the record label. But first, he was in the nightclub business.
And the name of the label was?
Bein' Baby Records was the main name of the label. B was for his wife Bertha, and he was Baby for Cadillac Baby. But actually, the Baby goes back earlier than that. When he was a kid, he was known as Baby Eatman. The winos started calling him Cadillac Baby because he always liked to have a Cadillac.
And you know, I was infatuated with the story. He actually did drive a Cadillac onto the stage of some of his venues.
In the Cadillac Baby Show Lounge, he built a revolving stage, and he built a ramp to the stage and the garage doors into the club, which actually was on two corners, 47th and Dearborn. And so he drove his Cadillac up onto the stage, and he would sit there with the microphone and MC the show.
Four CDs. About how many songs? Over
100? Well, there's 101 tracks. There are four little interview snippets of him talking about his life in Mississippi, his early history, and his time in Chicago, courtesy of Jim O'Neill, and Steve Cushing, another radio guy.
Yeah.
And that was very generous of them to let me actually enable people to hear Cadillac Baby's own voice talking about his exploits and about some of the musicians.
And, I mean, you can elaborate on this, but holy mackerel. Hound Dog Taylor, Sonny Line Slim, Sleepy John Estes, Homesick James, yeah. The late Andre Williams, who we just lost.
Yeah.
My friend T. Valentine. I think we might play one of his snippet of his track. We're going to have one of your artists on in the next segment, but... It's you know what I like about it? It goes beyond blues. I mean, it goes into, he recorded everything. I mean, soul, R&B, there's comedy, gospel. I mean, it's really, really a great flavor of Chicago life.
It really covers almost everything in Chicago except rock and roll.
Yeah.
He didn't do jazz per se, but there are a couple of instrumentals on this box set where you can hear. You know, it might be something like you might have heard from Jimmy Smith or Groove Holmes, but it was Paul Hankins. But, he loved all of it, and he wanted to have his hand in all of it as a fan and as an entrepreneur to make money.
You worked on this, you told me the other day, you worked on this 7 years?
I started working on it in earnest in 2012, yeah. But I got involved with Cadillac Baby in 1989 and 1988, and ended up the hip hop that's on this project was from 1989 when Cadillac Baby wanted to get back in the record business. And he and I followed our mission, which was to help musicians. And we met this young kid, 3D, who was 17, and his mother was hard driving, really helping him. And
Richard Davenport,
and she talked us into, convinced us that he was really worth taking seriously. And Cadillac Baby and I took Richard at the age of 17 into the studio and did two hip hop tracks. We didn't put them out at the time, but then Cadillac Baby died, and then a month after that, Richard was murdered. And so, but even though there were a lot of young kids, hip-hoppers that knew him and were calling me because they wanted the same, they wanted to get in the business too, that scared me a bit. So I just put his music in the archives until I actually bought Cadillac Baby's label and decided that was the final music that Cadillac Baby had his hands on, and was actually, you know, he and I were co-producers on that. It was going to be a B&B Records Earwig Music co-production, co-branded.
When did he pass? Real name Narvell Eatman.
His real name was Narvell Eatman.
Yeah,
but everybody called him Cadillac or Cadillac Baby or just Baby.
When did he pass away?
March of 1991.
And what situation was he in? I mean,
his health had declined from 89 to 91 and eventually ended up in a nursing home, but it was congestive heart failure.
Financially, where was all this music? These are all big questions. But
his music career was way behind him. He found out, like many people in the record business found out, that it's hard to make money as an independent label with local artists, no matter how good they are. And so after his heyday, which was from 59 to 65, even though he did some more recording in 70 and 71, he basically had a hard time financially. And by the time I met him, he was actually only selling some 45s that he had, as well as hubcaps, buying and selling hubcaps,
I read that,
and candy and stuff. But he still... You know, a lot of musicians knew him and would visit him, and he had a dream of getting back in one more time. And
so he is. Too bad. Maybe. Okay, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with one of the, there's not many artists left, but we're going to have one on the phone from Birmingham after this.
Yes.
And it's great because he helped you with this project.
He had some wonderful stories. He gave me more personal context for what Cadillac Baby's business was actually like.
So I want to talk about that, and I also want to talk about the chess relationship and stuff like that. So don't go away. This is great stuff on WGN's Nocturnal Journal.
I took him to a party at the madhouse inn. It was a big turnout, came all his friends. Everybody came with intentions to bop. The weak must sin, the strong must rock. They were rocking, they were rocking. Everybody. everybody was watching at a mommy to the madhouse jump. Witch doctor came about 11 o'clock.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. That's the Daylighters with Tony Gideon. I think we're Tony must be with Jerry Lee Lewis because I don't think we could find him either. But we're going to text him. So talk about that track. Talk about who these guys were. You know, I guess that I hadn't seen you in 20 years, but God, you're doing stuff like this. I always associate you with Sunnyland Slim and Honey Boy Edwards. Yeah, and then
I know, but but actually, I was listening to stuff like Tony Gideon was doing before I was listening to blues.
Yeah.
Because I was from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And vocal groups were huge and still are in Pittsburgh. And I would hear it on the radio and loved it. So so it was a natural fit. But Tony Gideon and the Daylighters were one of many local regional doo-wop groups. And for those of you who may not know what doo-wop is, doo-wop is vocal, group vocals, usually with a lead vocalist and background, well, accompanying vocalists, you know, at different vocal ranges, tenor, bass, baritone, often two tenors. And they're, doo-wop was hugely popular all over the United States and eventually all over the world since the early 50s. And Tony Gideon was in one of those groups, which is from Chicago. Actually, they started in Birmingham, Alabama, where he's from.
Right.
And they moved up here. He moved up here and then went back to Birmingham and came back again with his whole group. And then they recorded for Cadillac Baby as the Daylighters.
So you came, I didn't ask you this question the other day when we were having, whatever we did, we had a beer and a coffee at the Hollywood Grill. So you come to Chicago in 70...
I moved here in June of 72.
And you were a big music guy. Was that why you
came? I was a fan who knew I wanted to be around blues musicians, meet blues musicians. I had several thousand blues LPs by then, and other kinds of music, but more blues albums. And so I wanted to meet the musicians and hear them in their own environment where they were making the music and get to know them. And so Chicago was the place to be.
And I think, just in line with that, I got a question, but I'll put it on hold. Tony, you there?
I'm here.
Hey, how are you, Tony?
I'm hanging in, man.
Thanks for joining us. We got Michael on the phone.
Hi, Tony.
Yeah, I heard you guys.
Yeah. So, actually, he was talking about me. How did you guys first hook up? How did you meet Michael?
Well, actually, Jim O'Neill had phoned me several times and was asking all kinds of, I thought, crazy questions concerning Cadillac Baby and my time with, you know, B&B Records. And when I was talking to Bob Pruder one day,
oh yeah,
on Facebook, and I mentioned that Jim had called me and he was asking me all these questions. So Bob said, well, I don't know, maybe he's writing a book. And then Bill Dahl came on.
Mm-hmm. And they all helped with this project. Pruder and
Bill Dahl said, oh, he's calling you he's interviewing you for liner notes. I said, liner notes for what? Oh, the old Being Baby stuff that you did with Cadillac Baby. And that's how I found out that Michael had purchased the catalog. And then Michael and I, it's just recently that we got hooked up, touched bases with each other. And it's been a few months, right?
It's been a few months. Can you hear him now?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He
just asked me a question.
Yeah. How long have you been working together on this, Michael?
Well, I started talking with Tony about a year ago. I found out from reading one of Bob Pruder's books.
Yeah.
On Chicago, well, both of them, Chicago Soul and his doo-wop book about Tony in more detail. I mean, I knew about him from the 45s, but I didn't really know the depth of his experience or his deep connection to Cadillac Baby and his role until I actually started talking with him on the phone, and we became friends. I've never actually met Tony in person. Yeah. I hope to either go to Birmingham or bring him up to Chicago later on this year when I do a special event.
Tony Michael looks like a modern day Clint Eastwood.
Tony has such wonderful stories. He filled in a lot of gaps in my understanding of Cadillac Baby and his operations. And I said that plural because Cadillac Baby had his hands in a whole bunch of different things, and Tony filled me in on a lot of that
in
more detail and had a big role in it in 1959-1960.
What was his... I got two questions here for you, Tony. What was Cadillac Baby's business acumen like? And I know you've gotten your own business started, and what did you learn from watching the way he worked? What did you learn what to do, and what did you learn that didn't work?
Well, actually, I learned to record blues with Cadillac Baby. He had a tremendous year for blues and music in general, but especially blues. He could record blues like nobody else. And I picked up on that due to the fact that, you know, I started out very young in music here in Birmingham as a youngster. And music has always been a part of my life, you know. Okay. And but Cadillac was like a big brother or father or whatever you want to call it. Because we hung together day in and day out, and he would teach me or just talk to me about stuff, you know, and some things I won't go into. But he was a very sharp guy.
He discovered Hound Dog Taylor came around when you guys were... Tell the story about... I read that in the notes. The notes are excellent. I want to give props to all these guys that are friends of mine, Dahl and Pruder, and yeah.
We were sitting, we happened to be sitting in the club, and we were eating some red beans and rice. Miss B had fixed, and she could really cook. So anyway, Hound Dog would come by every day, get his wine, and he'd go down the fence with some of the guys he'd hung out with. Cadillac had a slab fence that ran down the sidewalk around the property, you know. And what I mean by slab, it had the bark on it. When you cut the outside of a tree and it leave the bark on that piece of wood. Well, that's the kind of fence he had running down there. And Hound Dog came in and he said, Elmore James had been working at the club, and Elmore was sick. He had Elmore had a heart problem. And so Hound Dog was standing there, and he was talking. He said, Cadillac, I can play like Elmore. And we looked at him, and we just thought, you know, he was, this guy is out of his tree. So anyway, Cadillac looked at him, and he said, oh, okay, if you can play like Elmore, there's a guitar over there and the amp. Go ahead. He went over there, he turned the amp on, tuned up the guitar, and took the bottleneck out of his pocket. And when he started to play, you would have thought Elmo was sitting there.
All right, on that note, we got to take a quick break for the news, but we're going to keep you both on for a little bit after 10 o'clock, okay? So,
okay.
Is that okay, Tony?
That's fine.
You okay, Michael?
Yes.
I like your shirt. Hey. He's wearing like a hippie Peter Max shirt here, Tony.
Life's a beach.
Yeah.
All right. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN.
Dr. Jeffin threw a party at the Madhouse. It was a big turnout. Came
came all his friends. Everybody came with intentions to bop. The weak must sin and the strong must rock. They were rocking, they were rocking. Everybody was rocking and a bopping to the madhouse jump. The witch doctor came about 11 o'clock. The purple people leader was
lost. Well, sometimes we got to hear Madhouse Jump again. So on the, I don't know if you heard it the first time there, that was Tony Gideon of the Daylighters on that track. How you doing, Tony? Tony, you there? Michael, you're here. I know that.
I am.
I don't hear Tony. We don't hear Tony in here. There's no Tony. I'm looking for it.
Well,
anyway, Tony, so we were going to talk about T. Valentine.
Yeah.
So talk about that. Yeah.
Well, T. Valentine is quite the character himself musically. When he's not on stage, he's just a very down-to-earth guy you'd never think was his stage persona. But he's a guy that met Cadillac Baby in 1959 through Detroit Jr., who is a musician also affiliated with Cadillac Baby. And T. Valentine he was a writer of kind of free-form stories like about vampires and all kinds
of. And he's still around.
He's still around on the South Side. And so he had a dream to be a recording artist. And so through Detroit Jr., he met Cadillac Baby, and because T. Valentine loved the blues, he ended up making a 45, which is a blues band with his sort of mixture of rapping, ranting, shouting. It's very different from anything else on the label.
Did you know him, Tony?
T. Valentine? Yeah. Yes, I knew T.
Yeah, yeah. He had that novel he hit a few years back, Lucille, You a Lesbian. Did you know that song, Tony?
No, I didn't. I probably was not in Chicago at the time.
Yeah, that was
his payback song to his ex-wife.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, we all used to hang out over at the, there was a club where we used to hang on Monday, all day on Mondays, and over on Indiana. It was in the basement of a hotel. And I can't even think of the name of it now.
We were going to play it on the podcast. We will hear a snippet of it, of Little Lulu Frog. You were telling me during the break that's Cadillac Baby doing the frog noise?
Yeah.
Really? So he was like all over the place.
Yes, he was.
He was an entrepreneur, right, Tony?
That's one of the things T. Valentine like, told me.
I don't know if you were around when the Regal Theater was there.
Yeah.
Well, Cadillac Baby used to own those trucks that ran up and down South Park that advertised in the shows for the Regal Theater. But nobody knew he owned them. Oh. I was probably the only one of the few people that knew.
And he also was involved. He would get a float for the Bud Billiken parade, right? He was like right there with Herb Kent, right?
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah, talk about that. Yeah. Who was on the float?
Herb became a very close friend of mine and of the Daylighters also.
And so, I mean, what was on the float? Was Cadillac Baby on the float? What was the scene?
Yes.
There's pictures of that in the...
There's a picture of him on the float. What I don't know is who the other people on the float were.
Yeah.
I don't remember who was on the float with him either.
Yeah.
And that's been a long time.
Yeah. You're invaluable to this project, though, because you're one of the last ones left who was there, right, Tony?
Yeah, and basically I was the only one that really wasn't a musician at playing on the sessions that would be at the sessions with him. We did sessions on Sunnyland Slim, Roosevelt Sykes. We did the Money Tree on Detroit Jr. And we did that, the Money Tree we did just to draw patrons into the club. And the song became a hit and sold 60,000 copies in the city of Chicago.
And what was the hook of the song? How did it get people to come to the club?
It was just a song. It really was just he just did a boogie type song. Too much money, da, 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 that kind of thing, and it hit.
Wow!
And the people just started. They would just come from the west side and different places into the club because the Detroit Junior had the house band.
And he was a good entertainer. I mean, he was able to keep singing that song for the rest of his life up, you know, on Lincoln Avenue at the blues clubs and blues and Kingston Mines.
Yeah, last time I saw Detroit Junior, I was living in Mobile back during the 70s, and he came through there with Howlin' Wolf.
Right.
Wolf was an old friend of mine. Anyway.
What a great project. Maybe we got 2 minutes left. Like, we can't answer this question in 2 minutes. I'll get out of the way. But what was the relationship with Chess Records? They knew what you were doing.
I recorded for Chess.
Yeah, right.
Leonard bought the first Watusi song ever recorded.
Watusi, yeah.
Yeah, and Leonard Chess bought the master from Cadillac, and he changed the title to What You Gonna Do, and he went on the flip side. The song was entitled The Way You Move Me, Baby. And about 8 months after the song came out, I got drafted.
Yeah.
So I was gone for 2 years.
And
I didn't go back to Chess when I got out of the Army.
I mean, I'm just trying to ask. I asked this to Michael last week. I mean, this whole landscape of like Chess and VJ, I just wonder where Cadillac Baby like fit in with all that. Was it kind of underground or not?
Well, Cadillac was the guy that, well, you would think actually had the third company behind Chess and VJ.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was located in Chicago, that actually cut rhythm and blues and blues.
Okay, we got to.
VJ was doing it all, and they had been doing it since about 1953.
Okay, well, we got a break. Thank you, guys. Thanks so much, Tony, for joining us tonight from Birmingham.
Hey, man, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in, Michael.
It's a pleasure.
It comes out in August?
Yes, early August.
And how can people find out about it?
They can go to Amazon.com right now. And
pre-order,
or they can go to earwigmusic.com, which is my record label, and it's up on my website.
It's great. It's really, really some great stuff. It's an eye-opener. So thank you. Thank you so much for coming in. We're going to be back with some live music from John Seeger, so don't go away on Nocturnal Journal.